Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with My Opel, rewarding loyalty and taking care of members.
Good morning and welcome to the programme. Today, the head of the HSE is here. We'll talk to Paul Reid in just a moment. Also, our hotel room squeezing the joy out of Dublin City. We'll debate. Larry Donnelly was raised in Boston by a politically charged family of Irish Americans, but he made Ireland his home and he's written all about it in his new book. You might have some pumpkin carving on the agenda this weekend. JP McMahon has a few ideas to make use of that bit that you scrape out of the middle. And it's Friday, so we'll have Callan's Kicks and The Gathering on the stories that made the headlines this week. You can text us 51551, email today cb@rte.ie, or on Twitter we're at Today with Claire. And I'm joined now in the studio by the CEO of the HSE, Paul Reid. Good morning to you. Thanks very much for coming in. So given that we've seen this increase in cases, and we had Philip Nolan here yesterday saying that we're on a knife edge, people are just asking now, is the vaccine that I had in the spring still working?
Yeah, well, first of all, just to say, you know, as we're talking about case numbers and vaccines penetration, we're at a much different place than we would have been if we were looking at 2,000 cases at a different stage in this year. So vaccines are working. They are proving very effective for those who've been vaccinated. I would see what's been happening over the last week or so as a kind of, not a panic button, not a need to hit the red panic button, but a significant early warning of a number of interventions that we need to be conscious of, where we've seen a huge swing in cases that were declining to a swing of very high positivity levels growing and numbers of cases growing every day. But in summary to your question, vaccines are working. Mm-hmm. They're protecting those who have been vaccinated from hospitalizations, illness and mortality.
But you know that people are asking, you know, is the efficacy of my vaccine on the wane? And can we answer that question today?
Yeah, I think from all the analysis and all the evidence that we are seeing in terms of hospitalizations, sickness, and particularly ICU, it's a huge distortion for those people who are unvaccinated, representing the numbers that are in our ICU. So right now, today, about 67% of the people in our ICU are unvaccinated. So hugely disproportionate when you think that there's just about 8% of the adult population not fully vaccinated. Mm-hmm. Similarly, in our hospitals, they represent a significant proportion, about 40% of people in hospital not vaccinated. You're about 17 times more likely to be hospitalised if you have not been vaccinated. So
yeah,
hugely disproportionate.
I just wonder, though, are we placing too much emphasis on the unvaccinated? Because we are a very highly vaccinated country. You know, we're second in the EU, aren't we? Second only to Denmark. Yet the other countries where people are not vaccinated to the extent that we are, they're not seeing the same level of increase in cases. So it's a conundrum, isn't it? What is going on?
Yeah, and I think you are correct. This cannot be what we're seeing over the last week or so in the trends. It's definitely a signal in terms of unvaccinated 370,000 people, and we have to work to encourage and drive mm-hmm. for an increase in that. And that's the process that we're on.
Yeah,
but you are correct.
But there's something else going on.
You are correct. For those who are unvaccinated, it's equally a very important early signal and alert for us. And so, for example, there are, and we are all back at work, and there's more social gatherings going on, and we are seeing more cases happening mm-hmm. in social gatherings, whether it's communions, confirmations, weddings, etc. So that is a factor. So it is a very early warning for us all, to do all those basics that have proven to be very important to us. And look, I'm in workplace settings and I see more meetings happening, more people in meeting rooms, more people indoors, bigger numbers of people in meeting mm-hmm. rooms.
Well, we were told we'd go back to work. So.
And we can go back to work. And what we really need to do is we're back at work, go back with the basics, right? You know, go back, hand cleansing, plenty of sanitizer around, plenty of ventilation in the rooms, social distancing at workplace as well as outside. So it's really just reiterating the basics for those who are vaccinated at work as well.
Okay. Professor Corina Butler was on Morning Ireland this morning, chair, of course, of the National Immunisation Advisory Committee, and she said there's no specific date that NIAC will be giving advice to the government on a booster programme. Now, if we're going to run into a wall of a fifth wave here, surely there should be a date on that, and we should know what's going to happen and when with the booster campaign.
You know, firstly, I think what has given the public good and strong confidence and has led to a very significant uptake in the Irish public of vaccination programme has been the advice that we've got from the National Immunisation Advisory Committee. And we in the HSE fully respect that and we act on that once it's decided as government policy. There have been the evidence from the National Immunisation Advisory Committee has directed us through government to start the immunocompromised, which is a third booster, and that's started and that's commenced. Secondly, in relation to those over 65 years of age living in long-term care facilities, and we're making good progress on that. It'll be finished in the next 2.5 weeks or so. And thirdly, those over 80 years of age in the living in the community, which is about 160,000 people, and that's well advanced through GPs. So that has been the first decisions, and that is important. In terms of further rollout of a booster vaccine, certainly from the HSE perspective, we would be anxious to see that evidence, an NIAC decision emerge when they make it, because we would have concerns. I'm running the HSE out of concerns for our healthcare workers, but obviously for older people itself.
So you need a date for that decision. I mean, you need that to happen sooner rather than later. And there is evidence there from other countries, in particular Israel, who started their vaccination campaign in December. So they have more information than we have. They've started their booster campaign. In the UK, they're boosting people over the age of 50. I mean, we need to get moving on this before it's too late.
Yeah, and there's two strands to it, just to that question in particular. Yes, from our perspective, if the evidence does determine that the efficacy is reducing, it hasn't to date. It's still shown that hospitalisation and illness is strongly protected in terms of, that's the evidence at the moment. But we are mobilised, we are ready to complete any other further evidence that emerges from the National Immunisation Fund. We've retained our staffing levels, you know, to the greatest extent we can from the initial phase of the vaccination programme. So we're ready, we're willing to do it. I think, along with looking at what might happen in boosters, we still need to continue the process of those who are not vaccinated. And there's a number of ways that we are still going about that, because that's important. That's 370,000 people who still haven't been fully vaccinated. And there's a range of initiatives that we are doing about that. So firstly, we're looking at, as you know, in third level colleges, we've had a reasonably good uptake, about 3,500 people in third level college pop-up clinics and walk-in clinics. We're looking at those who have had a first dose and haven't followed through on their second dose. There's about 70,000 people there, and we're contacting those and we're making arrangements. We're looking at areas where we see a correlation between lower vaccination take-up and higher cases. And we're working with the pharmacies and the Irish Pharmacy Union to have campaigns and initiatives in there and make sure they're stored up to carry out vaccinations. And we will run, following that, we will run some pop-up clinics in those areas where we are seeing that correlation as well. Okay. So we're concentrating on that. We will take the advice from NIAC. But it is, as you have said, also about those people who are vaccinated.
But there needs to be more urgency, surely, around getting a decision from NIAC. From your point of view, I mean, you're going to have to deal with the raw end of this if it goes wrong.
Yeah, but in fairness, we will always take the evidence. You know, we don't have the confidence at HSE. We will execute based on the evidence that emerges. And NIAC have that confidence. They have that skill. They have the resource. So they assess the evidence internationally and worldwide. They make the recommendations to us. Yes, from our perspective, we would be anxious to commence whatever next stage of the booster campaign is determined. Mm-hmm. We have the resources, we're ready to go. Yes, the sooner the better. It comes from our perspective. We're operationally focused, delivering care safely. But the sooner the better the evidence comes from our perspective, we will roll it.
So you're ready to go in terms of getting the big vaccination centres back up and running again?
Yes, we have the infrastructure. We have retained the infrastructure for our vaccination centres. Some of them obviously had to go back to whether they're third level colleges or race courses or various infrastructure we've had, but we've got alternatives. We have the workforce. Some of the workforce is not all deployed right now because of the level of vaccination we're carrying out in those vaccination centres. But we have the workforce. You know, some of them have come back into the HSE and to their previous roles. But we have the workforce, we have the infrastructure, and we will roll out when directed by government.
But there'll probably be an impact then on the health service if you're going to have to take people out for a mass booster campaign out of their regular jobs and back into vaccination centres, wherever those centres may be.
Yeah, we had a very significant uptake of the resourcing, and ultimately we had about 5,000 of workforce in the vaccination programme. A very significant proportion of that was made of people who come back from retirement or people who have just decided to come back to work, skilled vaccinators, and we hope to retain those and bring those back. Yes, there were a proportion who have come from healthcare services, and it does put demand, but we're equally recruiting in the health service to match that redeployment if it's needed.
You know, people, having heard Philip Nolan and Dr. Mary Favier yesterday and today, are asking now, what does Christmas look like? Do I need to be worried about the next couple of months? What do you think we're facing?
Look, I think we should be more confident than being absolutely worried about Christmas. I think the public have done exactly what we have asked for them in the majority to take up the vaccination programme. It's proven beneficial. It's reducing. Yes, we are seeing more cases and up to about 2,000 a day right now, but we're not seeing that transmit into the level of sickness or illness. It is a cause of concern that we have 413 people in hospital today, which is up 33, almost 35% at about 8 days time, 8 days previous, and 70 people in ICU. But we're not seeing those daily case numbers transmit to the same level that we would have seen pre-vaccination. So people should take levels of confidence. The vaccination programme is working.
Yeah,
it's
but those, beneficial. We're not at a stage yet, I suppose, where the high case numbers around the 2000s will have translated into hospital numbers. That may be coming in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, there's always a lag. And that's particularly our concern from the hospital, from the health service perspective, that yes, there is that lag, and there is, and that's, you know, important for people to understand why we are out communicating now. It's not just to say, here we go again. It's these are lead indicators of what might happen in the next 3 weeks.
Because you have serious problems in some hospitals. I know in Kerry there's a particular issue with bed capacity, isn't there? Can you give us a sense of what's happening in our hospitals and where is worst affected?
Yeah. Well, across the hospital system, we're extremely busy at a national level. We're seeing a lot of respiratory illnesses coming forward, seeing presentations to our emergency departments, which in some cases along the Western Seaboard, Galway, Cork, Sligo, and indeed Kerry, we're seeing admission levels, we're seeing presentation levels about 20% above what they were in 2019. Okay, so not even comparing them, but pre-COVID. So seeing high respiratory illness in the community at the moment, high numbers of people who delay their care. So yes, to your question, a number of hospitals are under more pressure than others. A number of hospitals have had to turn back and in some cases stop elective care. And that's a concern for us. Because
can you tell us where?
Kerry is certainly under pressure. Sligo, Galway, University Hospital. They have not all stopped elective care. But, you know, they've had to reduce it in some cases. And it's not just on the Western Seaboard, I'd say that.
So we're already at a serious crunch point.
I think as we head into winter, this is going to be a really challenging winter for us. We're putting in a number, and we're funded by government for a number of initiatives to reduce the pressure of people coming to the emergency department. What I would say to your listeners is our emergency departments are there, we're open, we're there when you need our care. If it's not urgent care, please do seek consultation from your GP or indeed your pharmacy. But we are there if we need your care. But we have a number of actions for the winter to reduce the impact on our hospital system. So GPs having access to diagnostics, trying to focus on treating people at home through our community intervention teams for the winter. A whole set of initiatives to reduce the pressure on the hospital system, along with putting extra capacity and teams of triage and consultants in our emergency departments. Because it is going to be very difficult.
Paul Cullen was writing that when it comes to COVID cases, our floor is high going into the winter in terms of the number of cases coming through, and the ceiling, when you look at capacity in the hospitals, is low, and that's where we're going to run into problems.
Yeah, well, again, I make the point, it won't be solely just about case numbers. That can't be our only indicator anymore because of what we just discussed around
vaccination. But if we're already running into capacity problems in hospitals, what's it going to look like in a month's time?
Yeah, and we have, we do know that throughout the winter, it's going to grow. The challenges in our and the pressure on our health service and our pressure on the hospitals is going to grow as we go through winter.
So will you be using private hospitals more, for example?
Yeah, there's a number of interventions that we're putting in place. So private hospitals will be part of a solution from two points of view. One, relieving the immediate pressure on our hospital system so we can keep elective care going. Secondly, we agreed, and the Minister brought through government, a whole set of actions between now and December, a short-term set of actions to address some of our waiting lists, those in most urgent need and care. And that's about 100 million euro of investment between now and the year end. Part of that will be increasing capacity in our public system by out-of-hours use of theatres and resources, extra capacity from the private system. We're currently using every week right now about 1,000 bed days in the private health system for people to get their treatment from the public system. So they're very much part working with us, very much part of the solution as we walk through
it. But there's scope to increase that, is there?
Yeah, we have a procurement arrangement. Obviously, the private hospital system has a level of capacity themselves.
Yeah.
So we have to be cognizant.
And it's
of
not
that.
Free to you either to do that.
It's done on a procured basis, yeah. and they are rates that are agreed for certain procedures that take place. And we're, you know, we're very thankful mm-hmm. to have that. But it is one of a number of elements and approaches that we are putting in through winter. The plan is just being finalised at the moment.
Okay, I want to ask you about scoliosis. Our reporter Brian O'Connell brought us an update from Adam Terry, the 10-year-old boy, on Tuesday. The case has been brought up in the Dáil, as you know. Why has Adam been left waiting so long?
Yeah, and look, I heard back the interview with Adam and his mum Christine, and it is heartbreaking. And those cases of scoliosis, and I've met the advocacy groups myself in the past, and it is heartbreaking. And they were on pre-COVID on a kind of trajectory of getting those cases done much quicker. And that had been progressing well in engagement between Children and Health Ireland.
Four years now he's waiting.
Yeah, and the reality of what's happened in particular, you know, over the last 18 months, certainly COVID has impacted all of our hospital systems. It's impacted our capacity and the procedures, infection prevention controls, what can be done in a certain way. So it has. And I would also add, particularly in the case of Children and Health Ireland, the cyber attack, I know people probably fed up hearing about this, but it had really big impacts on their systems because they didn't have access to children's records, and consultants can't carry out really complex procedures without that level. So it did impact.
Well, sorry, you're blaming COVID and you're blaming the cyber attack. This child is waiting 4 years.
No, and I'm merely just making the point that has been a factor. We are extremely sorry for what happened, and it's nothing but heartbreaking listening to Adam's story, and we're extremely sorry that that has happened, and extremely sorry for all the patients and their families waiting mm-hmm. for scoliosis surgery. What I will say is there's a number of actions that we're agreeing with CHI Ireland. They've submitted plans to us to address that waiting list as we move into 2022.
When we had Ministers McGrath and Minister Donoghue on the show during the week, just after the budget, we put this to them as well, and they said it's not a budgetary issue. They say the money is there. It's a systemic problem.
There's no doubt our waiting lists are definitely across the board are a systemic and legacy issue that we have to address. You know, it's a factor of the history of the health service that we have got the levels of waiting lists that we have. We are going to approach the waiting lists in two ways. First of all, an immediate action plan, funded action plan between now and the year end. And yes, it's under pressure with everything that we're seeing and the actions that I just set out to you previously. Also, we are addressing it in context of a multi-annual approach. Myself, Secretary General, and our teams are working on this. So address it on a over 3 to 5 year period, which is exactly what Sláinte Care had set out.
And do you agree that you can't spend the money that they're giving you, because you were given over 200 million to address waiting lists, and the Business Post reported last weekend that by the end of this year, only 97 million of that will be spent.
And the reality, if you look at our overall spend and activity to the end of this year, we'll be utilising all of our budget. That's a fact. What has happened is...
All of that budget of over 200 million?
No, all of our total budget provided to the HSE, so the 20 billion budget. What has happened is the expend and the expenditure and the activity levels have been hugely disproportionately impacted by what we've had to manage through COVID and having to put in a whole set of actions that have taken activity.
So it hasn't been possible to use that money that you were given for waiting lists?
It's taking, not all of it, it's taking activity away from what we would have liked to do. However, very positively, what we are doing is carrying forward that funding into next year. And we're going to finalise a national service plan now. But there will be a significant funding for our access to care fund, which will hopefully address some of the issues and the submissions that, like you just said, and scoliosis that we've got.
Yeah, because scoliosis is a very particular situation whereby Adam has been left so long now that the operation that he would have had, I believe, according to his mother, is not possible to do now. And because he's been left so long, he needs a team of 5 surgeons, and all of the other children on that list, around 200, are in a similar situation. They're getting worse, and their situation will not be able to be improved once they get past a certain point. It's a very specific, particular case. I'm sure you'd agree that needs to be addressed urgently.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but and I will make the point, the, you know, fusion, spinal fusion surgery is a very complex surgery, and it is carried out by multiple surgeons. And, you know, it does take time, and it does take a point in time for consultants to recommend the procedure. So it's not a case of, you know, can we do them all within 4 months, which is a phase that we were getting to. But from a consultant's perspective, there is a point in time where it's recommended. And sometimes it may be beyond that 4 months threshold that we had it to. So in very complex surgery, we are guided by very qualified surgeons who set out the time and the appropriate time for it. But absolutely, can I fully acknowledge the delays that has been impacted, we have to address. And we're extremely, CHI have apologised and are sorry that it's happened, and I am too.
Yeah, and do you know when Adam will have his surgery now?
I do know. I don't talk specifically on Adam's case, but I do know the consultants are engaged with Adam and his mum. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's an imminent date for the surgery, okay. But I'd prefer not to get into
that. Okay. The former Health Minister, Simon Harris, was on Morning Ireland this morning. He said he made commitments when he was in the job on scoliosis treatment in good faith, based on information given to him by the HSE CEO at the time. What did you make of that?
I didn't hear the comments from the minister this morning, but I've no doubt what he said. What we were doing at the time was working to, I'm not sure if it was my tenure or previous tenure, but what we were working to and have been working to.
I think he was talking about Tony O'Brien. He says he committed to getting scoliosis done in a timely fashion.
Yeah.
And Simon Harris made commitments to the families based on what Tony O'Brien told him.
No, and I've no doubt Tony O'Brien, my predecessor, that was made in good faith too. And there was a fund generated for it. It was a fund of about 9 million euros to support that investment. And there was very good progress on it. And if you go back to 2019, they were at that stage of having, you know, in general, to be at a point of 4 months of surgery. But as I mentioned earlier on, that's not specifically the case for everybody, as in terms of consultants' recommendations.
Okay, I just want to ask you briefly about Sláinte Care. I know you've said that you're fully behind all aspects of the plan. Why do you think people are leaving in droves? People who were committed, as committed as you say you are, to getting it up off the ground?
Well, I think if you take it from two perspectives. First of all, extremely sorry that Laura McGahey has left. I worked very closely with Laura since I joined in 2019. And Tom Keane, who's left a great legacy of healthcare behind in terms of cancer care. Having said that, we have been driving significant levels of reform throughout COVID. So we don't, it's not a point that we say when COVID's over, we'll start reform. Many of the reforms of Sláinte Care were implemented through COVID because they helped us through COVID. So moving that level of service into the community, community intervention teams.
I feel like it's a mystery. You know, you say that and then Laura's gone, Tom is gone, and the people who were on the council, the advisory council, are gone. Mm. Like, it doesn't make any sense. I can't figure it out. Well, I'm sure people listening can't figure it out either.
I've no doubt, because I met members of the advisory council, and I've no doubt that they have a level of frustration around progress on items of a waiting list. They have said that publicly, and I don't disagree, it's an issue. The progress around the implementation of regions are indeed e-health. Mm-hmm. They are levels of frustration that we all have and want to address. But what I will say, Claire, with confidence, the HSE has demonstrated its ability and capacity to drive pace and change. I've worked 30 years in the private sector. I've never seen so much change implemented by so many people over such a short space and time with such benefits.
Yeah, but
for the
people who've left don't share that view, clearly.
No, I think they had a level of frustration around other aspects, which were the aspects I've just said. And look, people will have levels of frustration and people will leave based on frustrations. It's just unfortunate, but we have to carry on with it.
A basic and final question on this. Do you believe that the state can afford a fully funded public health system?
Well, ultimately, what has happened, if you look over the last year and, you know, into next year, there's no doubt over previous years, the state couldn't afford what was required. If you look back to maybe 2012, upwards to 2015, 16, it couldn't afford the requirements because we did fall behind in terms of healthcare in Ireland. What we have seen last year is a significant enhanced investment, about 3.5 billion euros last year, and, you know, a significant investment for next year too. So I think we are playing a bit of catch up. And I think it's going to be a sustained level of investment that certainly as the CEO of the HSA, I believe, is needed into the future.
OK, but you could do it without the private system there, can you?
I think the private system are now very much part and have to be very much part of how we deliver. So we want the public hospitals to be specifically focused on public care. That's That's our future vision. That's LaunchaCare. That's government policy. But I do see in the immediate term, based on the pressures that's on our system, the private system will be part of giving us enhanced capacity as we need it.
All right, Paul Reid, thank you very much for coming in. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.